The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown Your Questions, episode 491. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
What's up, people? How's it going?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Majoma.
What's up, what's up?
All right, guys, you already know, back with another one. Brett gives you guys a shout out. He was actually here before for a little bit talking Elden Ring, but you know, he's still kind of out of it with his whole spine stuff. So he'll try to be on, but you know, obviously, you know, his health comes first before anything. So we want him to rest up and play that Elden Ring, you know, getting his ass beat. As we all are. Anyway, so I'm just gonna get into it. So first things first, I didn't edit these questions or even look at them beforehand. So if any of these read weird, blame yourselves. You know? Oh, man. All right. And again, I'm just going to read these in the order we got them. Gino Breaker 26 starts us off. Do you think a Marvel versus Capcom style game with a roster of anime characters would sell? Examples would be Spike from Cowboy Bebop, Kaneda from Akira, and Eva Unit 1, along with some newer characters for broad appeal, like the main guys from Demon Slayer or Jujutsu Kaisen. Now, here's the thing. Jump Force exists. It's basically that same deal. You have, like, you know, Luffy and Goku and Ichigo, a bunch of these characters. So you kind of have, it's not Marvel's Capcom style, obviously, but you do have a bunch of that. And Manny, you could speak more to this. A game like this would be a licensing nightmare.
Yeah, that's specifically why you have a situation why, like, Tatsunoko versus Capcom, where it's a specific company that that has multiple properties, so you can get away with, like, you know, you could have, you know, Tatsunoko versus Capcom, or you could do like a idea of like Osamu Tezuka or Tezuka Productions versus a Capcom. It'd have to be something like that. One, a company that has a bunch of different properties. That's why Marvel versus Capcom sort of works. Because Capcom has a bunch of well-known video game properties. You know, Marvel has a bunch of well-known, comic book characters and properties. So you can easily kind of meld them together. To understand, to get a good idea of like the nightmare that one of those is, think about something like Super Smash Bros., right? The only reason why Super Smash Bros. Even happens is because they were willing to go through the cycle of trying to get, you know, everything, get all the rights to those properties, or in some of those situations, it's more of a reuse of a pre-existing property. That's why Snake hasn't actually changed since the last time you saw him in Sonic and a bunch of those, because there's maybe something that's in their contract that says, okay, if you use the same old one, it's fine, but if you decide to do anything new, we need to approve that and all that other stuff. So it's a lot of dotting I's, crossing T's, and all kinds of other stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, Mandy, to your point, like, even with Jump Force here, one of the reasons they were able to make that happen is because a lot of those
same characters, publisher.
All of them, yeah, it's all, from Jump Force.
It's all Shonen Jump. But, if you want to do another thing, you would have to take another imprint, like publishing imprint, and do something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, let's say they did, Capcom versus Shonen Jump or something like that.
Yeah,
exactly. It would have to be something like that. It would have to be, and then the thing is that you would also, I would also think that being that it's a somewhat unrelated type, they also may have to do some sort of conjiggering with the actual creators, because the creators still do own the rights to their properties.
Yeah, so this game, I think it would actually sell, but it'd be impossible.
Yeah, it'd be really, 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 really difficult.
Yeah, because right here, like, you know, Ava, right? That's a Gainax.
That's not Gainax. Oh, who owns Ava that? Ava is owned by its original creator. Gainax is actually okay. Gainax is actually going out of business. They filed for bankruptcy.
That's right. Yeah. So Evangelion is what's his face? Oh, like oh my god,
it's Ono's company. Not, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm guessing the same thing with Akira, right? Like it's Otomo. It belongs to him.
It's Otomo. Yeah. It's Otomo and maybe possibly the publisher of Akira, but I don't know. So it'd be a lot of different things. Like here's one thing
you can sort of get. By the way, I'm like, why am I blanking on this? Hidetaki Anno. He did.
Yeah, I said Anno.
No, I think we said something. I think we both said something else.
I said Anno.
No, we but said, anyway, no, we both said Ono.
Yeah, Ono. Okay, whatever.
Face that anyway, mess up. You know,
it's Yoko Ono. For real. Anyway, it's like okay, so you could kind of get away with this one. So Bandai had produced a lot of anime, right? So theoretically, you could do a bunch of Bandai created anime.
Yeah, yeah, you could like
Gundam, that would include Cowboy Bebop and quite a bit of other things. Yeah. So yeah,
okay, yeah, Cowboy Bebop, Gundam, and a bunch of stuff. But getting some of these others might be a little trickier. But yeah, I do think it would sell. People would love these properties, but it would just be very difficult. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, good stuff there. Next up here, another anime game-related game question. Do you think the new Dragon Ball Z Sparking game will be as popular as the older Tenkaichi games back in the day? I don't know.
I can't answer that.
Neither can I. I've never liked any of these games, man, to be honest. I love Dragon Ball Z, obviously. When Akira Toriyama passed away, we had a little segment, and I purposely made a video. We all love Dragon Ball around here, but me personally, I've never liked the games. The only Dragon Ball Z game I like is the Arc System Works game, and that's because it's an Arc System Works game. Even, like, the closest one I got to kind of almost liking was Kakarot, and even that had a lot of issues, you know, these really loose controls, not very precise. So I don't really care about this parking game. I know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the big deal about the game is, like, you could have alternate stories. Like, for example, what if, you know, I don't know, what if you didn't kill Raditz or some shit like that? I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? You could change the history or whatever. I think that's, like, the main selling point, but yeah, I don't think any of us here on this podcast are equipped to answer this question because we don't care for Dragon Ball Z games, you know? So, yeah. All right, moving on here. Jolly Yellow Nerd. Do you think there is a chance that if the Marvel vs. Capcom collection sells well, that we may not only get Marvel vs. Capcom 4, but also perhaps get the other crossover games, like finally getting Capcom vs. SNK 3? Okay. Again, this is the first time I'm looking at these questions, but it made me think. With Capcom vs. SNK3, I think it may be tied. This is just me literally just having this thought right now. It may depend on how well received the Fatal Fury characters are in Street Fighter VI. Like, maybe if there's some interest, people go, oh, let's finally release Marvel vs. SNK3. Because they did two games. Then that was it, you know? So maybe.
I think that's what the thing is. That's them testing the waters without actually going through the process. So what if they released another, you know, once these guys drop out, what if the next step of this was Capcom versus SNK Fighter Collection? Because there's also multiple examples of games that fit into that fighting collection that would fit in that collection too.
Like what?
I think there's another SNK Capcom thing that's somewhere in there too. It was like a Game Boy game that they did or something like that, or like a Game Boy Advance game. So there's a couple of things that they could kind of work into it. So if those characters do well in there, yeah, I could definitely see them wanting to put them in.
Yeah. So yeah, it's possible. Yeah, they probably would want to get some more crossover games, like brand new ones, because I think they're pretty much going to exhaust all the ones that are currently out or have been released. And nobody wants a re-release of Infinite. Let's just be real here. Nobody wants that shit. You know, I was watching this video from this YouTuber called Top Hat Gaming. He's like a retro YouTuber, right?
The British guy, yeah.
British guy, yeah. By the way, his wife is Lady Decade. And this is how I discovered that, because I watched one of his videos and I watched Lady Decade video. I'm like, the editing is exactly the same. So I looked, I just typed Top Hat Gaming, Lady Decade. Turns out they're married. So that makes sense. I'm like, the editing was exactly the same. You know, it's like, hold on. So obviously, anyway, so he, oh my God, now I lost my train of thought. So he was talking about, So he was talking about Marvel vs. Capcom, all this stuff. He's very happy, obviously. And he reminded me of that bullshit Capcom tried to pull. Remember when they, in Infinite, you couldn't have X-Men, and they dared to say, and people didn't really care about the characters. They cared about the movesets. Remember that bullshit? Like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then I was talking to one of my other friends, and he was like, yeah, that community manager is not around anymore, is he?
No.
It's true. You know? Yeah, I was like, oh, you know, people like Magneto because he has, you know, 8-way combo. I'm like, no, they liked him because he's Magneto, you know, fuck out of here, you know. Or they were like, oh, yeah, you know, if you like Phoenix, you know, Carol Danvers has the same moves. Nobody gives a fuck about Carol Danvers. They want Phoenix. They want Jean Grey, you know. It was ridiculous.
But I mean, to be honest, it's doing those things. And this is what goes back to that original question. It also depends on, you know, the licensor, what the licensor wants to do. At that point in time, Disney was very much in the light of not wanting to promote anything X-Men related. And the only reason why Wolverine is even in there is because he's such a popular character. He's beyond any of those things. But yeah. You know,
yeah. By the way, this is one I forgot. They said, oh, you know, it's been so long since these games came out that people may have forgotten about the X-Men.
No, it's not that nobody forgot about the X-Men.
People forgot about the X-Men. Mind you, and this is something Top Hat Gaming said, Logan released 4 months before this game dropped. Yeah, people forgot about the X-Men. Yeah, insane.
Nobody forgot about the X-Men. It's the damn company that literally ended them essentially trying to cover their asses and make up these sort of like things. And like these games that last game didn't come out. Marvel versus Capcom 3 didn't come that far ahead of Marvel versus Capcom Ultimate.
No,
in fact,
you're right.
It's the same. In fact, it's the same fucking game because they didn't even do any real work to it. They just changed the skins on everybody.
Yeah, they just made them not look good, you know? Because at least like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 had that cool kind of like really inky look, you know? Infinite was just trash, you know? But again, even if you were, I know we're off topic, but I don't care. Even if you're a normie, right? Even if you're a normie, you know what was happening during that time? You had three successful X-Men movies back to back. You had First Class, you had Days of Future Past, then you had Logan. I know you had a couple of stinkers in there too. People, even if you're a normie, you knew about the fucking X-Men, you know? But then again, X-Men, even if those movies didn't exist, normies know what the fuck the X-Men are. Everybody, X-Men, you can't with a straight face say, oh, people forgot about the X-Men. Are you serious?
Literally Marvel's most popular comic book.
For decades. You know, come on now. So that's bullshit from on Capcom's part. Anyway, I'd get that rant out off my chest. You know, maybe Marvel's got a Capcom SK3 will come. We'll see. All right. Oh, what's going on? Dumeke? Barry Burton in the house. X-Who? Yeah, I know. I forgot. Capcom said I forgot. I also don't care about these characters. I only care about the movesets. Ridiculous. All right, next up, Cuban Boss. Yeah, he has 4 questions, but I'll allow it because he's been back. He's been out for a while. He goes, been a minute, but still listening. School and work been keeping me real busy. Thank you all for keeping the content going as always. It makes the third shift nights go just a bit easier to tolerate. And cool, man. Good stuff.
Good stuff, man.
All right, let's see here. Okay, it was 3 questions. That wasn't a question. Anyway, with Forbes reporting that Helldivers 2 has lost 90% of its player base with no signs of recovery, is Sony feeling the pressure that these live service games might not be it, or do you think they're still going to keep trying? Well, yeah, of course they're going to keep trying. They still
got to keep trying. Yeah.
See, look at see people in the chat forgot who the X-Men were. You know, maybe Capcom was right. Anyway, go on.
I mean, yeah, I think the thing about that is it's dropping. It's because that's the way service games go. If you're not the installed one, you know, it's gonna happen. There's gonna be a drop off. But I guarantee you, it didn't take an Uncharted budget to make that game.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a game to get you subscribed to, not really subscribe, but essentially constantly, you know, paying for DLC or constantly paying for content and keeping people coming back over and over. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah. Kishak goes, majority of live service games lose player base over time. This is a non-story.
Yeah.
Brian, do you agree with that?
Half and half. Most do, but most tend to lose either very quickly. Again, take all examples of all the ones that have been shut down. Like, they lost the player base incredibly quick, and they don't recover. With Helldivers, it is interesting, because it was holding solid for a while, and then, ironically, around the time the PlayStation Network controversy thing has happened, it just seemed to just steadily go down after that. So I don't know what else they changed in that time frame, but something happened. So yeah, again, I think Sony will keep trying, but I think the issue that I have is that this was a game not developed by Sony. So I think they owe their success to the fact that they know what people like and they're able to tap into that. I feel like games that will be made by Sony companies will be overseen by Sony, and they'll ask them to do things that, for the most part, gamers really don't want. And I refer back to the days of SOCOM 4, where Sony asked developers. They forced developers to put in nonsense that the SOCOM fans really didn't want, like golden guns and changing their camera angles, as well as a bunch of gameplay stuff that I'm not going to go into. And ultimately, that destroyed the game, as all the SOCOM fans were like, what is this? This is not SOCOM. This is some game trying to be SOCOM. And obviously, all the fans that they wanted to attract, mostly the Call of Duty guys, they were like, this is not Call of Duty. And then the company doesn't exist anymore. So I think that will be the issue. I think the only way that Sony can get another hit is if they literally let the devs do what devs want to do with minimum oversight from Sony themselves, because I feel like any type of influence that Sony will have is not going to be good. So yeah, that's my thoughts. So yeah, as long as it's made by a Sony studio in some way, shape and form, and or Sony has significant oversight, I don't think it's going to do well.
Yeah, it seems to me the game like dropped off precipitously after that Sony nonsense. So I kind of agree with your point there, you know. Again, I could be wrong, but I think that's what really killed that game. As soon as that bullshit happened, plummeted, you know. Like, okay, Kishak goes, there's 35,000 players on Steam right now. Yeah, that's good, but think about the numbers they used to have, you know. So yeah, I agree with you, Brian. If Sony just leaves them alone, let them do the thing, they'll do better. But if they start mucking around, forcing people to, you know, have PSN logins, it's going to be an issue, you know. And I think people in general are going to be wary moving forward when any of these online games from Sony, they're going to be like, do I need to do this? And especially the PC gamer base, they really don't want to tolerate that shit, you know. It's ironic, isn't it? It's like Sony kind of did well with the PC gaming crowd with this game, and then they completely lost their like faith, you know. Very interesting how that worked out.
Very. I'm just looking at the Steam chart at the moment, and it's fascinating, because the one game I thought that was never coming back is Power World. Okay, so Power World's at number 15 with about 70,000 concurrent players, which is a lot more than I thought it would have. And like, the only games, well, I say the only games. Games that are more played than it include Final Fantasy 14, Baldur's Gate, GTA 5, Call of Duty, Apex, wow, Destiny, Team Fortress. Like, these are like the big heavy hitters. And Helldivers is number 27.
Yeah, that's
steep. And it's just edging out Left 4 Dead 2.
Wow. Damn.
So, granted, Left 4 Dead 2. Wow, DayZ's on there? What the fuck? Okay, ignore that. Granted, Left 4 Dead 2, I think, is considered to be like the best co-op shooter of all time. So that's still a really good feat. But yeah, I'm surprised that Helldivers has fallen this far. But again, maybe the whole PSN thing just did not recover, and it's a shame. Wow, even Siege is beating it at number 19.
Yeah. See, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long way from where it was before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. All right, man. Good question there. Moving on. Another one from Cuban Boss. Oh, this one's a little long. Also, to stay on the Sony train, reports have recently come out that Sony has contracted someone new to handle their emulator scene to bring new life to their old titles, basically, and put it in their higher service tiers. But they mostly run either like crap or don't use the power of the PS5 to boost anything, unlike the Series X does on some of their older titles. Why do some of these companies look down on people who make emulators like RPC S3, for example, and not to try to subcontract them or something to have a product that already works on the PC scene and perfect it on the console side, instead of keep releasing these half-ass emulators that or take the Nintendo route and subcontract other studios to handle remaster ports of older titles? I need my damn Infamous Collection, yo. That shit cannot be stuck on PS3. So I guess the question, it was kind of long. I guess the question is like, why doesn't Sony get like people who have a better track record with emulators than them?
Well, that's the thing. Number one, they don't, their meat and potatoes is their new titles. So they're not going to make a huge investment in their previous titles. I mean, unless they can, and they've proven that they can just repackage their new titles and do a remaster or do a, you know, or do a remake and, you know, bump up interest. I would say one of the reasons why, and also on this situation, they are using the company that's doing this, these new PlayStation 2 emulations are actually people who worked on PC PSX. There's some people that worked on that original thing. So it's like, okay, so how come they're not applying that same knowledge that they, you know, from the new thing? And then here's the thing. How much of a budget are these guys getting?
Yeah.
To do these things. So they're like, all right, we need you to develop, you know, we need you to develop an emulator. All right. How much money do you got? Well, we only got this and this, and that's it. So, you know, just do what you can. And then, you know, as long as the game works on there, we're good to go. And then they're also making the promise that they're going to be more titles on there.
Yeah, and I also just thought about this now. What about whatever restrictions maybe put on them too, or demands or mandates that they got to follow too, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if Sony has a thing where they're like, okay, we don't want these games to, we just want these games to work. They don't need to be better than they were.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and like you said, budget. So time, you know, all that stuff. Because if you're if you're just a regular emulator guy, you're just taking your sweet time. You know, you're under no, like, even if you don't have infinite budget, you have kind of have infinite time to do it right with them. It's like, here, you know, if these guys are working with Sony, they need to do it on a specific date by a deadline, you know? And like you said, if they don't have any money, things would be a little bit of an issue, you know?
Yeah, so I definitely think it's a multiple things. Like, I would say whatever Microsoft did, that crazy thing that they got working on there is utterly amazing. The idea that it literally just it looks on their network, it's, you know, looks at the disc that you got, looks on their network and see if they have that game running, and then it'll run that game in a better form. It'll run at a higher resolution, in a lot of cases a better frame rate. But that's also the big difference between that, is that they're using the same, you know, architecture, whereas Sony literally for the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3, those have two totally different architectures. Oh, excuse me, and the PlayStation 1 all have different architectures. So
yeah,
it definitely is something that needs a lot more of an investment in it. But it seems like Sony doesn't have any interest in, or PlayStation doesn't have any interest in really devoting some serious time to it.
Yeah.
Blitz and money.
Yeah. Blitz goes, won't the remastering engine just make it all work?
Well, I mean, the thing about the one thing about patents is there doesn't need to be any sort of working technology. And that the remastering engine, as you know, hip hop called it, that is just them, you know, essentially, you know, putting that, you know, essentially putting the pin on that thing that they're looking to be able to develop.
Yeah.
But obviously, it doesn't seem like it's a thing. It just seems like they're just going to use emulation and that's it.
Yeah. Kishak goes, they'll have to agree to license the GPL3 license if they use RPCS3. He also says Sony isn't going to spend hundreds of millions on a feature where 95% of people who will only boot up one game for about 20 minutes for releasing it shit and never using it again. Yes. Not that big of a demand, you know?
Yeah. That's exactly it right there. It's just not that big of a demand. I mean, obviously as gamers, we would love to see a lot of these titles on there, but the PlayStation has the numbers and they see what it looks like when they have these titles on there. So they see that, okay, you know, people are more willing to go out and buy a new game with a bit of a upscaled, you know, some upscaling done to it than they would, you know, an old game that they put on there. So in a weird, odd sort of sense, Jim Ryan is right.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? Yeah, he's right in the end.
He's right in the end in that sense, because it's like, obviously to us, it's like, no, that's your legacy. Why are you letting go of your legacy? You're being stupid.
Yeah.
But on his end, it's like, well, you know, we have the numbers and we notice that these things don't get any sort of budget, any sort of money whenever these things sort of come out. And when they sit there on the store, they just cost us money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. To be honest, in a perfect world, I would like to just see them just really make a legitimate effort to get these games to run, you know, like run as a bit or as close to the original with some bells and whistles or a little bit better. And from what John Littleman said on that Digital Foundry thing, they are slightly running better just because of for the plain fact of running on the old newer hardware. But there are still things that need some work. But the thing about it is, like, will that affect every single one of those titles? Or are we just stuck with whatever emulators packed along with that game, you know?
Yeah. Kisha says the casuals speak and they don't use it. Yeah. I mean, it's only really the vocal minority hardcore guys that want, you know, the backwards compatibility and all that. Let's just be honest, you know?
Yeah. It's an unfortunate fact, but yeah, the loudest ones are the hardcore who still remember these games.
Yeah.
But it's all about just like music. It's the new thing just like music and movie. It's always the new hotness that always gets people attention. Why? That's precisely why Disney isn't re-releasing old cartoon or their old animated films, because I'm sure they're probably like, oh, well, the minute that we release those films, you know, it's probably not going to do that well. But if we decide to spend a little bit more money and put out a quote unquote live action version or essentially a remastered version of those, a remake of those original films, that'll get new interest, even though it's, you know, it's not even for a lot of those films. They're not even like that different from the other ones, other than them being somewhat live action and using CGI.
Yeah. Barry Byrne, take care of that person, please. It's a fucking bot. Is there a space where the vocal minority actually holds the most influence? No. Well, actually, Twitter. You know, for gaming, not really. Because again, they got, you know, these people want to make their money at the end, you know.
For gaming, the way it works is if the majority is the one that's paying.
Yes.
If every single person, if they're making a decent amount of money off of something that is within that sort of hardcore gaming space, they'll do more of that. And we've seen it happen before. They've webbed and flowed because those two things align, the hardcore and the new or the old.
Yeah. All right. Another one from Mr. Cuban Boss. with the Coalition, not the Coalition with a K, Coalition with a C, with the Coalition removing old Gears videos on their channel, people seem to think that signals the Gears collection is incoming. Has any company ever done this, removing old videos to replace for the fresh? I had no idea this was happening.
I don't know.
I don't know. Has anybody heard of this ever happening? Where they remove old videos? Like, I've heard of removing old games when you want to have a new version.
No, I mean, like, on Twitter, you know, we don't notice these things, but I'm sure these companies do this stuff all the time.
They may, yeah.
Removing older videos. Does it mean that a new Gears collection is coming? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Rich, what are your thoughts on this? Are you aware that this was happening?
Well, I am aware that the collection is happening, but I didn't know about the videos being removed. I'm not really sure, but we do know that our very good friend Adam Vale was angry because this wasn't announced at the Xbox Showcase. We know the collection is coming. I mean, clearly it's been on people's resumes, on their LinkedIn, they've worked on this, so it is coming, but I don't know why they didn't announce it yet, so.
Yeah. But yeah, I wish we could answer the question better, but it's like we don't really keep track of this stuff. What do you think, Carlos?
No, yeah, it's like you said, it's like really niche stuff. Like, there's, you know, usually videos, people don't watch videos that are old from video games. It's like, who the hell's watching Uncharted 2 videos today? Like, not that many. So it's hard for people to tell, like, when something gets taken out, unless it's someone that watches that stuff every day or every week. So yeah, it's hard to tell. It could be a lot. That could be the only case. Or maybe someone did a cease and desist. I don't know. It could be anything. But yeah, I feel like I don't know. I don't feel like there's a correlation between the both of them.
Yeah, I think so either. Yeah, but again, you know, like you said, not many people are going in. They're like, oh, do they still have that old Halo video? It's like, no, people aren't really doing that. So I'm curious to know how he discovered this. I'm assuming some website talked about it, or maybe some Twitter post. I don't know.
Or, you know, Reddit forum.
Yeah. It's crazy. What the fuck's going on in my neighborhood tonight? Oh, you hear all this shit? It's crazy.
Nah, what's going on?
No, it's just sirens. It's been going off for 20 minutes now. You know?
Oh, shit.
All right. Okay. I'm glad you guys don't hear it then. I was like, fuck. I was like, that's a real New York podcast. You hear that shit? Woo, 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 woo. You know? Okay, and the last thing here, he goes, on another note, much love for the cast. I hope Brett's back feels better. Sorry about your mom, Tony. And I also wanted to make a quick comment for anyone that decides to get this is kind of fun. For anyone that decides to get Lollipop Chainsaw and support that game, go to Play Asia and get that shit there, which has a day one and date release with English support. Don't wait 3 years to get your shit from Limited Run's bullshit website. Look at me. I'm an insider now.
is that the game that came out like a long time ago? Is it getting re-released?
Yeah, it's getting re-released. Yeah, but I guess I haven't, Manny, you probably know more. I haven't been keeping track. I'm guessing it's all just digital. Is that why you said that?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe there's
you a mentioned Limited Run. So
yeah, Limited Run does take notoriously long to get to games. So we'll see how that sort of stuff goes. But yeah, Lollipop Chainsaw is getting it's more of a remaster, right? Because they've replaced all of the original art, you know, all the original characters and stuff with new textures and new stuff like that. So, but as I remember, it has the ability to switch it back to its original form too.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what. So it's supposed to be coming out real soon.
So it's a game like so.
It's as it was originally. No, for the most part. So
is Limited Run Games the only one making this physical?
I don't know if Limited has it existed
yet. I'm assuming that's why he made that comment.
Well, I know that. I mean, to be honest, like Play Asia is kind of weird. You know, I know you just advertise Play Asia, but Play Asia is kind of funky and weird too when it comes to their getting titles to them. I attempted to get Black Myth Wukong through them, the physical edition of it, and I don't know what the fuck was going on there. They have it listed on their site, but they don't tell you if it's out of stock. They just still have the page open, which is stupid. Like, if it's out of stock, then pull the damn page off.
Yeah. But yeah, again, I'm just curious because why is he mentioning limited run games unless this game is not getting a physical release, which it may not. You know, we've seen that happen a lot lately.
But yeah, what they're probably he's probably
up, so I don't know.
What's actually interesting is that in Hong Kong they still release in Japan they still release their titles on physically. So, you know, you can still get a Japanese title that has or a title from Hong Kong, which will have English dubbing and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is an interesting comment here. JB Dominguez from YouTube. What up, fam? Really long time no see. JB from the Dominican Republic. Dimelo.
Dimelo.
I'm finishing a master in endodontics, so no time to live really, but I miss you all so much. Much love. Cool. Thank you, man. You know,
thanks, man.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm glad you're still keeping up with us. We are back on YouTube. But yeah, I can't really speak more on Lollipop Chainsaw Nerd play the original game. Although I was curious, but I also heard it was mixed stuff. Like
it's your boy James Gunn, son.
Oh man.
The only reason I remember that is because the advertisement had a, like these hot chick influencers. Yeah. That had these small tees that had Romero on the
Carlos on Romero. The
you never know. But yeah, it's been a minute since I've heard about that game.
Yeah.
Seems like all the old Suda 51 games are getting re-released. They just put out Shadows of the Damned recently, and so now they're doing Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yeah. But it says here, and I'm reading, where am I reading this from? Rock Paper Shotgun. I didn't notice that it was still around. Original developer Suda 51 and Grasshopper manufacturer aren't involved, and neither is original writer James Gunn. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. It's not they're just reusing the whole game. Yeah. So.
4K, 60 frames, you know, all that good jazz is coming. All right, there you go. Moving on here, Presti 71. That's Jason Presti from Twitter. Shout out to him. Whatever happened? Okay, what happened to the period years ago when destruction? He's talking about destructible environments. Was the hot up and coming game feature? It was the main thing. So many developers were striving for, but then it just disappeared and everyone stopped caring. How is Red Faction Guerrilla, a 15-year-old game, still my standard for destructible environments and gaming? Brian, I'm tossing this one to you because this is something you've been yelling about since Throwdown started. You know,
it's an easy one too.
I honestly have no idea. I think, oh gosh, but screw it. I think the issue is that Uncharted happened. It was a game that came out. People loved it. And then everyone said, oh, this is how games should be. And then game developers started folding into that mix. And then it all just started becoming incestuous. And then it's like, oh, people like Uncharted. So we make more Uncharted and less games that have destructible environments. And I think that's what happened because I honestly have no other understanding as to why we don't have more, because I'm still here just like I still remember the days in like early PS3 days where they were like, oh yeah, this PS3 has so much more power, you know, we can do so many things, look at all the things we can do. And then now we're here 15 years later, give or take, and it seems like we're just getting the same games. And it's like, how is it that these consoles are like what, 16, 24 times more powerful, and yet the games are basically the same, just look nicer? And it's like, this is not how I imagine games to be. Like, I expected at this point to say, okay, now we can actually start pumping out amazingly destructible games. But no, it's not the case, and I hate it.
Yeah, Carlos, you said it was an easy answer.
Yeah, it's they started focusing on higher resolutions. That's the trick. You know, the whole thing, you know, with NVIDIA and AMD, they started scaling like crazy, and better GPUs every iteration. Even with the pros, they're just better GPUs, not really better CPUs. So, you know, destructible environments are more CPU intensive type processes. And most of these folks are more worried about getting these games to be 4K. To be 60 frames per second than to have that type of fidelity. So I feel like that's the biggest reason why destructible environments, the fad of destructible environments kind of just went to the wayside. Although, a lot of games do it, but there's not that much of an emphasis, like Red Faction kind of, keeps getting brought up because everyone thought that was just the beginning. But in reality, it's looked like more like an end.
Yeah, that is interesting. All right, we finished all. Kishak has a question here. I'm going to toss this one in next. Do you guys think the length between the teaser reveal of Elder Scrolls 6 and its release date will be longer than the development length of Duke Nukem Forever? Oh, man.
Hmm.
How long? When was Elder Scrolls 6 announced? We could look this up,
I think it was back before Microsoft bought them, if I'm not mistaken. Or
6 years ago. It was before.
2018, June.
Okay, what about Duke Nukem? How long was it for it to come out? Was it not 8 years?
No, that
was more than
that. Was like 10.
Okay, 10 years. Okay, so hopefully it won't take that long, That's funny. Yeah, I noticed that, Barry. There's a lot more spam tonight. Fucking
14 years.
Damn, okay. They still got time.
14 years in development. I don't know if it was the 14 years since it got announced.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Since it was announced. That would be something. Yeah, Barry, you're earning your non-existent throwdown paycheck tonight. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think Elder Scrolls 6, I mean, it got announced 6 years ago, 2018. It's been 6 years. I feel like we still got at least 2 more years before we even hear something about a concrete release time frame. Like, oh, this is going to be fall of 2026 or fall of 2027. I'm pretty sure we're still 2 years away from even getting that announcement.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, moving on here. Mob Hits. Miyamoto was recently interviewed, and he mentioned that Nintendo only needs to have one big hit every 3 years. Do you think this logic would make sense for the other two, Sony and Microsoft, or does this formula only apply to Nintendo? For no reason whatsoever, Chris, why don't you answer this one?
It's a me.
Okay. I just stepped back. I just heard the end of that question.
Okay, I'll repeat it. Miyamoto was recently interviewed, and he mentioned that Nintendo only needs to have one big hit every 3 years. Do you think this logic would make sense for the other two, or does this formula only apply to Nintendo?
Is that actually true?
I don't know if he said that or not, but apparently he mentioned that. We have another question about Miyamoto. I think he had an interview recently. Oh, actually, this say that right there. Recently interviewed, and he said that.
Well, I don't think I don't think it works for anyone. I'm kind of curious why he said that, because if that was true, they wouldn't schedule Pokemon the way they have to intersperse the holiday titles and then have another big first party title to go along with it once a year. So they don't really have one big hit every 3 years. If it works out that way, if they have one super successful title, but they've had multiple over a million sellers, and so that cadence doesn't make any sense. That would mean in the lifespan of the Switch, they'd only would have had two big hits.
Yeah, that's why I was confused. I'm like, haven't they had one big hit, at least one every single year? They have. Yeah. I know they have.
Yeah, so the cadence doesn't make sense. And then to answer the overall question, the answer is no. That strategy would never work. It does. I don't know what he's talking about. Nintendo doesn't do that right now. And no other
company. Oh, Chris, hold on. Some context real quick. Sorry. Kishak goes, Miyamoto also said to be considered a big hit is to sell over 30 million.
All right. Well, that's his metric. That's not the metric of the business side, though. I mean, they constantly brag about anything that has broken a million, right?
Yeah.
And I would think, since Nintendo's a more modest company with more controlled budgets and things like that, they don't need that kind of excessive success. So what he's counting success, I don't think anything has hit that except Mario Kart 8. I'm pretty Animal sure that's like 30. Oh, Animal Crossing hit over 30 million?
Yeah, I'm pretty all sure right, well, it's like 40.
Okay, so those are the two titles. So that's what he's saying. But that's his definition of big hit. I don't think that's an accurate definition for Nintendo. I think they've had multiple big hits. I think they've had at least one a year. And they've had some that have sold. They have Zelda sold, like, what, Tears of the Kingdom hit, like, 6-7 million. I mean, those I would consider also big hits. I mean, that's in the stratosphere. When you hit 30 million and stuff, that's, like, stratospheric success. To him, I don't know. That's crazy that his metric's like, oh, if it has to do over 30 million. That sounds like something Ubisoft would say. Like, that doesn't sound like something Nintendo would say. Because they always, and on the business side, when I read the financial reports, there's always more modest expectations and more modest bars for success, right? And they've hit that with many titles. So to say, like, you have to get over 30 million, it's like, well, then yes, then you would be right. You've only had two. But that's, I don't, big is, you know, subjective. And his definition of big is definitely not shared by everyone else.
Yeah. All right. Moving on here. Another one from Mob Hits. With gaming already hitting its halfway point, and with us already knowing what's left to be released for the other half of 2024, which really isn't anything to be hyped for, can we actually see a DLC expansion win Game of the Year? He's referring to Elden Ring. So I guess he's asking, like, with such a lackluster year coming up in the last half of 2024. But here's the thing. We kind of weirdly answered this question already. Like, go ahead, Carlos.
No, we didn't. This was our definition of can it be Game of the Year, but Jeff Keighley?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, that's why I said we kind of answered it. The question was, does a DLC deserve to be, or can it, should it deserve, whatever. It's something along those lines. So this is another version of the same question, I feel. But, maybe I'm looking at it wrong.
I mean, there's not a lot of contenders so far. So, yeah. You know, having Elden Ring, you know, when Jeff creates his list of contenders, he's going to need firepower. He needs to sell the show.
Yeah.
he's not going to sell the show with Stellar Blade and what else came out this year? Freaking Helldivers 2.
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
First and foremost, Carlos and Chris, they are looking forward to Concord, so you got to add that game in there as well. You know, we always got to take a shot at that game whenever we get an opportunity.
I'm pretty sure next week I'll be the one hyped for it, right, Rich?
Yeah. It's very possible. I just was going to say, there are some other games coming out. You still got Black Myth Wukong. I'm pretty sure that will be nominated. But I don't know if Elden Ring is going to be nominated. We already, like you said, Tony, we already spoke about this. It's definitely not going to win that award, but we'll have to wait and see. I think there's some other stuff that's going to get added to that list. I would be surprised if that's on the list, though.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, because when we answered this similar question last time, I know it was me, Chris, and Brian were like, no, DLC should not be considered for Game of the Year. I know Carlos disagreed. Manny, you too. Yeah. So I think it was you and Brett that said it could be. And my stance is the same. Listen. I'm having a blast playing this fucking game with Carlos and Chris. Loving it. Probably the best experience I've had all year. But it's not a full game. So, nope.
Yep. Yeah. The only way, to be honest, and I said this before, the only way I can consider this its own game is if you could access it without having to do those specific things in the game. If you could just go off and do it on your own, on its own, then I could consider it a new game. Like, you know how, like, we consider, essentially, even though Miles Morales is theoretically a DLC of Spider-Man, being that you can access that thing on its own, it's its own game. Same thing with Uncharted Lost Legacy. It's pretty much a DLC for Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
But you can access it, you know, outside of the game. Same thing with Infamous First Light. That was originally a DLC, but you can also buy that game separately from the original game. So it can be considered as its own title.
Yeah, I think Elden Ring will win best ongoing game. It could.
It could definitely win that.
Yeah, because I did say that was the solution. It's just have a category, best DLC, problem solved, you know?
Yeah, the best ongoing game, you could definitely give it to that because it is an ongoing game, even though this is probably the last time it's ongoing.
But, yeah.
You know, Final Fantasy's been winning that for the last
Cyberpunk
3 years,
won
right?
fucking best ongoing.
Yeah, and Cyberpunk won best ongoing game because of the Phantom Liberty DLC and all the other stuff that they did in between. Yep. So, yeah, theoretically, Elden Ring it would be in line to win that for the Shadow of the Erd Tree.
Yeah, exactly. And that one's actually online, unlike Cyberpunk. It's crazy, man. All right. Does anybody else want to answer the question? Could Elden Ring win Game of the Year?
If it's nominated, I think it can.
Yeah. If it's even on the ballot, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Because, you know, I mean, Black Myth Wukong, you know, that has to be great. And if it's not, it's got no business being on nominated for anything. But, you know, that's the type of game that if it hits, it could, you know, sweep the whole game awards.
Yeah, it's true. All right, man. Moving on here. Another one from Mr. Mob Hits. How can Steam offer such freedom, like free cloud saves and online play, but console still can't? I have an answer, but I'll let Brian go first.
Ooh, good question. My first thought is pure greed. I think because Steam is... I think the consoles are doing it mostly because it makes money. And they can charge you for it and you'll pay for it. And there's nothing really much you can do about it. And I think this is evident when Sony changed from offering online players free to charging, because they've seen how much numbers it was and said, hey, you know what? Let's actually make people pay for this. Because for the most part, there's not really anything you can do about it. I mean, you can't play online without having to pay for it. So, yeah, you're kind of just screwed in that aspect. And again, Microsoft did this first because reasons, probably money. So Sony followed suit, and then Nintendo probably will follow suit at some point. But yeah, I think it's mostly just greed, and they know that they can charge you for it, so they do, and there's nothing that you can really say and do about it, which is fucked up.
I didn't think you... I mean, I don't disagree with what you said, but I thought you were going to answer it the way I was about to. To me, it's pretty simple. Console players allow it. That's why they tried to charge, you know, PC players online. They weren't having it. They were not having it, you know? So it happens because console players allow it. That's why it happens, you know? Kisha goes, this begs the question, would PSN be better or worse right now if it was still free? It was free for a while. It's free for a long time, you know?
Yeah, it was.
And it's paid now, and isn't any better? I don't know.
I was about to say the same question. Like, is it actually any better since it was, like, paid for?
Not really. Not really.
Well, the thing is that what they're really doing is that they realized that Xbox was making way more money off of their subscription service. So they're like, okay, so how do we get these people? What do we do to lock people down behind a subscription service of our own? It began with PlayStation Plus, and then it moved on to that PlayStation Plus. Well, you had to have that in order to get online with your console.
Yeah. But Brian,
with the saves.
Yeah. But Brian, what do you think about what I think, which is that this happens because console players allow it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is it.
It's partially that, and I think a lot of console players, they not only allow it, they accept it.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah, they accept it. Yeah,
like, oh, hey, well, that's the way I need to do it. Okay, I'll just put down the money and do it. That's how they do it.
Yeah,
you see it all the time. Like
I think accept is a better word than allow. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, but I think accept is a better word for it. Console gamers just accept it, you know?
Yeah, they just accept it.
Yep.
But for Xbox is actually a little bit different. I don't think their cloud saves are locked behind anything specific. All of their games, at least from what I notice, that are any of their first parties, they automatically update themselves. So I don't know if there's a cloud, but I know that there's a syncing. They sync between the versions. So if you have Xbox on your Xbox and you run over to your PC, it'll sync the saves.
Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, that's pretty much it. All right. Last two questions. Oh, what's up, Brian?
Because I think the other aspect of the question was how can Steam like afford to do it? And I think just because Steam's business model is you pay us 30% of each game that is sold, and that's where the revenue comes from. And I think Team Fortress 2, the fact that it's still in like the top five most played games, and that has microtransactions. So probably all of this just adds together. But yeah, this is... and I just noticed that it's actually every company that has games on PC offers cloud saves without you having to pay for them. GOG has cloud saves, and they don't charge you anything. So, yeah, it's fascinating. I just noticed that now.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean,
cloud saves for game saves, it doesn't really take that much data. It's mostly just, you know, a file with a whole bunch of, you know, values, and that
it actually does take tons of data. Like, if you check the save files of your PS5 games, they're like hundreds of megs.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not gigabytes worth of space. I guess that's my point.
More part of that, amongst what, 50 million, or let's say 10 million? Because, okay, how much did God of War Ragnarok sell? Or the God of War games on PS5? Like 10, 15 million, give or take? Yeah, so multiply that by 10 or 15 million, you have a good couple of gigs for that. And then, of course, when you multiply that with like Call of Duty games, and I don't know how much save files they have, and yeah, I think it slowly adds up. GTA 5, I don't know how big the save files for that are, but I'm certain it must be stupidly big.
Yeah, a couple comments here from Kishak. He goes, I think Xbox trained console users to pay for online. I don't disagree with that. They were the first. Yep. I don't disagree with that. He also says GOG limits cloud saves to 200 megabytes per game. Tensor, I wonder how they enforce that. All right.
Yeah, I wonder what Steam does.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That is interesting, though. All right, last two questions of the night from Do Make It. With this generation of PS and Xbox being lackluster, to say the very least, can the next generation possibly be any better, given games cost more and more and take longer and longer to make every generation? I have little hope other than getting a dump of games that should have come out this generation but took too long. Oh, fuck. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know, Carlos, I want to get your thoughts on it, because you and I have kind of had this, especially you, have had this, the feeling it's like these generations keep getting worse and worse ever since the PS4 generation, you know, and I don't really have much hope for the next generation. I don't think it's going to be better than this one. And this one's terrible.
Yeah, I don't have much faith. It's just, you know, it's been a trend. I mean, something needs to buck the trend for me to change my mind. You know, and this generation hasn't been that much better than the last one, probably worse. So I don't know. I don't know what type of next generation is going to be better, other than the fact that the hardware is going to be better. Because that was sort of our line of thinking even before this generation.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, wipe the slate clean. We're going to get a new generation. Let's start fresh with new hardware. Hopefully this time we get all the games. But no, you know, the whole COVID stuff happened. And then people use that as an excuse for delaying games for almost 4 years. Now people don't have that excuse anymore. And games are still taking forever to make. Yeah, it's just this whole thing where things are taking forever to make, budgets are getting bigger, so games it takes a lot for a publisher to greenlight a game, because it just takes so much money, because that's how much they're willing to spend, because they're only thinking about the larger reward when it comes to, you know, generating games. So it's like, oh, let's make this game that's Redfall, that's a, like, you know, a shooter game, that's a co-op game, that's not really original, but it's kind of like this game, there's not much originality to it, but you know, they created the game, and you know, they made the game, and you know, most people didn't like it. The only person liked it was Rich, but other than that, it didn't really do anything, and that's just how gaming is. You know, Tony, you sent a video the other day about why music is getting worse.
Yeah.
That's across the board with all media.
True. Everything.
You know, there's just people not making games for the inspiration of it. It's more of a mechanical thing than it is an artistical thing, you know, making video games.
Yeah. Kish, that goes, it could only go up from here, but that's my stance on life in general. I mean, that's a good stance, but, you know, entropy is a real thing, man, and nothing could ever stay at the top forever.
I have that feeling too, but with life in general, but with video games, that's something different.
Yeah. So no, I don't think it's going to get worse. And you know, and that's going to make me ask some very interesting questions about myself, you know, because, you know, if gaming keeps going down this route, what's the point of playing video games? Maybe I'll just do what I said I'd do like 20 years ago. If games get really bad, because remember, I've kind of had a bad feeling about games for like a good while now. Maybe I'll just play retro shit. You know, I'll become like Metal Jesus, you know, just, you know, but not get fatter, you know, as fatter than I already am.
Oh no.
Shout out to Metal Jesus, man. Maybe I'll be one of those guys, you know. I'll just, you know, join his crew, just be a retro gamer, you know, get myself like a big apartment or a house. No, I'll get a house and the basement will just be nothing but retro games, CRT TVs and shit, you know. Nothing beyond the PS3 era, you know. Who knows, man. Yeah, I don't really have any faith. I think the game is going to get worse. I think entertainment in general is going to get worse. There will be a tipping point, obviously. I just hope it's in my lifetime. I don't know. But within the next couple of years, I don't think so, man. Sorry. I can either tell you, you know, what I think, or, you know, sugarcoat, oh, gaming's great. It's going to get better. Excuse me? You know? Fuck that shit.
Well, who's, you know, back in the 90s and the 2000s, it was a gold rush. You know,
it was.
You know, people were going, you know, creating studios on their own, making video games and out of their garages, and because they were trying to make, you know, they were influenced by making video games as an art, you know, and passion, people,
you know,
it was passion, and that doesn't exist anymore. No. Video games is just made by the numbers. It's like, okay, it needs to have this, it needs to have this, it needs to have this, because we're going to put in $20, $30, $40, $100 budgets on these, and it needs to make a lot of money. So let's have multiplayer. Mm-hmm. Let's have loot boxes. Let's have X and this. So, you know, and that's just from the triple A perspective. The single A perspective, I mean the indie perspective, you get some good games, but, you know, for the most part, it's, you know, Castlevania type clones, Metroidvania clones that, you know, 2D scrollers, side scrollers and stuff. So
Metroidvania.
Yep, pixel art.
And random game where the plot line is that someone dies because somehow developers are so unoriginal.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm also in like the same category as Tony here. I don't think it's gonna get any better. I think it's just gonna get slowly, it's gonna be a managed decline, Tony.
Yeah.
And it's, and I think we're kind of seeing it now with Sony's weird push towards live service games, which, as I've said since I heard this news, it's not the way to go. Granted, they want to do something different, fine, but at the same time, we've all seen like these live service games have just come, crashed, and gone, and they very rarely have ones that succeed. I mean, in the last couple of years, you can argue that Rainbow Six Siege is possibly the only one to have succeeded in that aspect, because everything else has just gone down the toilet. Call of Duty, we can't use that, because again, that is the exception to the rule. It's Call of Duty. It gets its own. It's like GTA. They just get their own category. Like, you can't use them because, no, they are outliners. Everything else, like, what was it Cliffy B made like two different like life service games, or like the hero shooter and then the other one that both failed? Oh, yeah. Like that retro 80s one, which I'm drawing a blank. And yeah, so I think it's just going to be a case of things are just going to get slowly worse and worse. And yeah, even with like the indie games, I'm slowly just starting to get like really numb to the nonsense. Like someone put out a tweet saying, why is it that we don't have more indie games that are inspired by like the PS2 era of games? And I think that's a very good point and very good question. Like, why don't we? Like, most of the indie games are like 2D Metroidvania games. It's like, okay, fine. This is probably where most people grew up playing, but the people that are in the roughly mid-30s, 40s, like are starting to be like the PS1 era, like the N64 era, and yet we haven't really gotten games like that, and it's interesting to see. So I think unless the indie games scene starts thinking more about, okay, let's actually be inspired by other games, then that's just going to do stagnate, because if I have to sit through another trailer of some abstract artistic game where the theme is death, I'll fall asleep because I'm just so tired of that. I think I'm more tired of that than I am of like 2D pixel art games at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know. And you've been complaining about that for a long time. And I don't blame you. It's like, oh, this game is about how I'm coping with the death of my father. How many times have we heard that, you know? It's like, okay, whatever.
I got tired of this when Spider-Man did it in Amazing Spider-Man. So you think I'm going to, like, deal with it here, you know? Like, I even got tired of the dead child trope back when the first Watch Dogs did it. And it's like, oh, we're doing this again. So hence, yeah, it's, I think games just really need a kick in the butt. They need a solid just kick to say, okay, you guys need to wake the fuck up and like look at things properly and start doing stuff.
I agree.
Ironically, and this is the really funny part, games made in the East don't have this problem.
Yeah, and Brian, just to, you know, really hammer in your point, this year, all the games I've liked have been Eastern games. Every single one of them, no exception. Final Fantasy, Seven Rebirth. I had a boy Joe Biden moment right now. So Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Stellar Blade. Actually, go back. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Japan. Stellar Blade, Korea. What game am I hyped for? Wukong, China. And right now, I'm playing another Japanese game, Elden Ring. Right. So yeah, you're 100% right. I'm glad that Japanese games are still keeping things interesting. You know, and I'm also just glad they're back in general, because remember, they had some dark times during the PS3 days, man. Japan in general had a hard time transitioning over to 3D, I noticed, right? And for a while, especially the PS3 era, there was dark days when they were trying to be more Western. And then towards the end of that, and Manny, you sent this great video about this, like, kind of resurgence of Japanese games. I still have that shit bookmarked. I watch it every so often, where Japanese developers like, let's just make Japanese games again. And people loved it because as an American, I'm not trying to play a Japanese game that's trying to be a Western game. I'll play a Western game. Give me a motherfucking Japanese game, you know, because it's a different feel. So I'm glad that Asian developers are really, they're the only reason I'm still playing video games. I'm just going to be honest, because all this nonsense coming out of the West right now, I'm not going to say it directly, but you know what I'm talking about, is souring all of entertainment. So I'm so glad, you know, Japanese developers largely are staying away from it. Square Enix kind of dips their toes in some of that stuff, you know, but some of these other developers are like, no, we're just going to give you what we do. Go ahead, Manny.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, why are you, obviously they were trying to emulate, you know, during the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 generation, Japan sort of got left behind, you know, when it came to that. And they thought the solution was to, was to essentially try to emulate what the Westerners are doing, which is not. And now, like, the thing about it is, like, you look at a lot of the Western titles that were getting all big and crazy. A lot of them were based off of Japanese games, you know?
Yeah.
What is God of War at its core? Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
You know?
But I remember...
Even now, yeah. what is current God of War attempting to be? Souls Light.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I forgot the point I was going to make. But no, you're right about that. It's, that's what it was. So even Final Fantasy 13, they even said, oh, the reason the game is more linear is because we're trying to be more like Call of Duty. This is a fucking RPG, and you're saying you want to be like a shooting game, you know? And then remember, there was this one game, it was literally like a Gears of War game, you know, but it's a Japanese game. It was like, you're like a big beefy dude, and you have some girl with you and shit. You guys know what I'm talking about, cover base and all that. It was such a strange game, you know? But yeah, I'm glad that era is over. But when we got to the PS4 era, it's like, fuck this shit. You know, let's just make Japanese games again, you know? And they'll sell because that's what people around the world want, you know? Why do you think anime does so well? Because it's different than the animated stuff we get here, you know? Thank you. Thank you, Asia, for keeping things going, you know?
Why are subs better than dubs? Because their voice actors are better than ours.
Yeah, that's funny. Although, you know what I will say to that? You and I, we both watch it wrong. You really want to watch Japanese in its real form? Learn Japanese and watch it without any fucking subtitles or dubbing, you know? That's the real way to watch anime, you know? You and I were watching altered versions, man. But either way, go watch good anime, too. Why not, you know? All right, last question here from Tumeke and for the show. I'm seeing confirmation that Miyamoto gets paid $1.7 million a year and Nintendo CEO gets slightly more than $2.2 million. Do you think Western executives are overpaid or are Japanese executives underpaid? Interesting question. Chris, you want to jump into this?
I don't know if primarily, like I said, Nintendo works with more modest budgets and salary scaling and stuff. So they're the what they command, the president of Nintendo and Miyamoto as like a creative director. And now he's handling kind of their outside products and licensing and the stuff with Universal. That's commensurate for what they earn. Our CEOs over here are their pay scale is completely whacked out. Like, we have talked on this show, you know, a ton about like what Bobby Kotick was getting every year. How, you know, the board would vote him like crazy raises. Like, you know, he was making hundreds of millions of dollars a year in options and in pay. Right? Our pay scaling is out of control now. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not railing for any commie stuff here. Right? If you are like success and you work your way up the company or whatever, that's fine. And as long as everybody's getting paid fairly, that what was happening at Activision and what's happening at EA and other places is definitely not that. CEOs are brought in from all sorts of different places. They have no relation to the company that they are in charge of, right? Many of them are, you know, come from outside of gaming. And then they command huge salaries, and how they game the system is they'll ramp up big projects, and then by the end of the year or a couple years in, they start cutting people, so they make their operating income shrink, right? And then the board goes, okay, and the shareholders and investors set caps, like, here's what your operating income needs to be for you to get a bonus. So how they hit that bonus, they just start laying off people, hit that bar, get a bonus and a raise, right? Which is usually phenomenal. It's dwarfs what Miyamoto and Takeshi are making. I forgot who the president of Nintendo is right now, but it dwarfs it. It'll be in the tens of millions for most people. It's kind of outrageous that they're allowed to get away with that, and you know, you're kind of screwing people under you, especially the people making the products. And that's what they'll do. When they don't hit that profitability, they start resorting to underhand tactics to make sure they get paid. So I don't like that at all. I've called that out many times. So I think on the scale, yes. The CEOs in Western studios or Western companies, definitely their pay scale is kind of outrageous. Compared to what they do, and they never take a hit when there's failures. You know, you think Sarah Bond is taking a hit with the Xbox, or there's nobody at the top taking a hit for poor decisions, poor investments, poor planning, nothing. Who ends up struggling? The developers, the creatives, everyone. They just get dumped, right? It was not their fault. They didn't greenlight the project. They didn't say, hey, you have to go do that. They just try to carry out the directives from the top, and then they get screwed. So I think that's a problem on our end, that it should be more like how Nintendo is and Capcom and all these guys. And talent should be nurtured from within. Like Miyamoto didn't start as this, you know, creative director. He was a creator. He was an artist. He was a programmer, whatever. And then he had ideas, right? So he worked to where he is. A lot of guys in there come up from in the company. So that is something that should be fostered here more, I think, and that would solve a lot of these issues. Because when the pay scale is coming up from within the company, there's not somebody coming from outside. Well, I'm coming from Budweiser and I made this many millions, so I, you know, and now I have to run, you know, whatever, let's say EA, and I want this much, you know, and then they get it, right? Because it's like, oh well, Budweiser does well. It's like, but that doesn't make any sense. Like, you're selling beer and now you're going to sell video games. That's the logic that goes into many of these hiring decisions for CEOs in Western companies, and it's stupid.
Yeah. Blitz says Bobby Kotick contributed fuck all to gaming compared to Miyamoto, but earns 10 times as much.
10 times? He earned 100 times. What was the... Wait, let me go back to the question.
Yeah, it was more.
1.7 million? No, I mean, Bobby Kotick was... per annum was earning 30 times what Miyamoto gets, right? And his raises were outrageous. So it's on a scale that's ridiculous. And yeah, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, he contributed nothing. The Activision was in shambles, and now it's Microsoft's problem.
Yeah. Isn't it, this might be a stupid question, but isn't it also like a matter of like maybe Japan just doesn't have as much money as like America, or is that just dumb? Like, because I'm wondering what is the difference in like pay scales. That it's big, you know.
Yeah, it's a big difference. But so like, yeah.
And by the way, just to be clear, you know, I'm not giving any commie bullshit. It should be the same. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm just wondering what contributes to that difference, because like even Japanese games don't have even their AAA games don't cost as much as our AAA games. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But with the modest budgets comes modest payouts too, right? Like, that's what I was saying about Nintendo versus other companies. Like, definitely internal, and especially having worked there, like, they don't pay as well for the same type of job as other companies in the West. Like, and that's true across the board for low-level people, executives, whatever, sales, you know, you name it, right? It's just that they command such talent there because of the brand, right? So people want to be associated with the brand and then launch off to something else. Or they stay, some people stay there years, decades. The difference is like they, you know, even though the scale of their projects aren't as big, that's also a problem with Western studios. It's like the budgets are too big, the studios grow too massive, right? And they start doing too many things at once. They need too many people, and then they start outsourcing. It's just this growing problem. It's like, we need more resources, right? That's all people are to them, resources, right? And then what happens? Like, stuff is over budget, your operating income explodes, and then what happens? Then mass layoffs after a product doesn't, you bet on the product doesn't sell, right? Then there's a massive shelling of people. That's no good. That's not a way to run business. Like the way that Nintendo does, the way the Japanese do it, is like they scale their resources very conservatively, right? So they, you know, they have a modest budget for things, a modest amount of people, and they try to make everything work with that modest amount of people. They don't start saying, hey, we need five orchestras to compose this thing, right? And we have a $1 billion budget, so why not? Go ahead. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, you have to kind of scale your product down from, you know, the lowest level up, right? But with us, it's the top down. It's just like, hey, we're going to allocate this much money and throw as much shit at the wall until this sells, right? That's not, and that seems like the business model for most developers and studios nowadays in AAA. And it's not working. It's totally not working, and it's a bad model, and it just leads to failure. And then I add on top of it the DEI initiatives, and then everything is just in the toilet.
Yeah. All right, man. Good stuff. That was a good answer. All right. We're pretty much done here. Manny, do you have anything to plug?
Why, yes, I do. And you're probably going to keep hearing this until we've reached the weekend, a week of the 10th. Anyways, coming this July the 10th is the 40th anniversary special for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, of which, you know, you probably know that I worked on the original Ninja Turtles, well, the 2003 iteration of Ninja Turtles. And what they did for this special is they got back a bunch of teams from who worked on different iterations of them, especially, you know, obviously starting with Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, but then also, you know, all the rest of like Rise and all that. And they also got myself, Carter Randolph, and Lloyd Goodfine, the showrunner and producer of Ninja Turtles, to do a special story for that. We also did, Kari and I did one cover, and I did one, drew one cover fully. And that's all coming on the 10th. Of July. Also on the 10th of July, if you have seen my Twitter, I am going to be premiering the 42-minute time lapse of me drawing said cover that that is part of this. So it's going to be all live, so it's going to be running through my system here, and I'm going to be doing, you know, questions and answers while the footage is running. So you know, stay tuned to my Twitter, and yeah, go out and buy some turtles if you like turtles.
There you go. And Rich, what's going on with the Coalition?
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of things we've been writing about, a lot of games that are coming out soon. So I would definitely say check the website out this week. Yeah, there's a lot of things in the works. So stay tuned. Not really any major game releases coming until August. But yeah, still a lot of previews and stuff that I'll be posting up. So be sure to visit the website this week.
Good stuff. All right, people, we're done here. Oh, ho, ho, I just realized something.
Whoa, ho, ho.
The fucking 4th of July, man. It's on Thursday.
Yep.
So we're going to be back on Wednesday, aren't we? Yeah, we're doing Throwdown on Wednesday. I just realized, oh, shit, hold on. We're celebrating our freedom from the fucking Brits that day. Yep. Okay, so yeah, Throwdown will be here on Wednesday, people. You already know. Talking about gaming, I don't expect a lot to happen this week because it's like the week before 4th of July, but yeah, you know, maybe, yeah, you know, well, then again, I was going to say maybe another influencer would get up to trouble. We wouldn't talk about that anyway, you know, so.
Yep.
Fuck that shit, man. All right.
It was a game developer or a journalist.
Yeah.
That turned out to be a pedophile.
Oh, yeah. By the way, regarding that whole Dr. Disrespect thing, this thing's just getting crazier, isn't it? May have been a plant, people, but you know, whatever. We're not talking about that shit. Hold on, Brian. Did I miss something with a game journalist getting frisky?
No. I'm just saying, because again, as you said, nothing interesting will happen. And it's like, yeah, usually that's when like something big drops.
Yeah, that's true. You know, man. All right. Anyway, we're done here. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter, join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. Also, if you have been watching us on YouTube and like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live every Thursday and Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes, you know, we change up if there's a holiday, like 4th of July happening on a Thursday. That's a weird week. I have Thursday off, then I got to go back to work on Friday. Like, what?
I mean, you should have took Friday off, man.
But I did it because half the other people took it off. I'm like, I better not take off. Somebody needs to be here to work, you know? And then considering I had already taken 2 weeks off because of the whole mom thing, I'm like, yeah, let me not take a break for a while, even though I'm taking a break tomorrow. But anyway, we could find us on any podcast app by searching for Throwdown Show. That's towards Throwdown Show. And lastly, throwdownshow.com to listen to past episodes. Links to everything down below. Once again, I'm your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight's joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
And Brian Majoma.
It's the 1st of July. You know what that means.
Actually, I don't know.
It's second half.
Oh, wait, something ended. That's right. Yeah, that's right, Brian.
June ended.
Yeah, June about? Ended.
We're officially in the second half of the year now.
Yeah. Oh, something ended, though. I'll probably say this again to you, Brian, on Wednesday. But and remember, I'm not religious, but I have to say this way. I pray for you and your country, man. Fuck. 4th of July, you may not be celebrating that day, you know?
I'll definitely be drinking.
Yeah. Actually, not maybe. You won't be celebrating because it seems like no matter what, you're going to lose. So my condolences to you right now, you know? Oh, man, shit is crazy. All right, people, we're back on Wednesday, and we did not beat Medicare around here. Later.